I'm Cody from Game Life Balance US, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
I am the Green Arrow.
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I'm the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and your other award-winning reporters for this episode number 222 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
All I know is that when the three of you show up, you usually have one huge problem.
Including Diggle usually throws up. And Michelle.
I'm the original vigilante.
Okay, Oliver. Barry. We'll talk about that later. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, December 13th, 2018, live on www.geeks.live. Come on and join our live chat.
That's right. Generally, this is the part of the show where I warn you, we're going to talk about Arrow and potentially the other shows with spoilers. No, we're talking about all of them. We're spoiling the crap out of the three-part crossover of Elseworlds. We have a ton to talk about, so Michelle, why don't you kick us off?
Sure thing. The three-part Elseworlds aired December 9th through 11th, 2018. The first part was directed by Kevin Tankeron. Part 2, James Banford. Part 3, Jesse Warren. For writers, part 1, developed by Greg Berlanti, Andrew Kreisberg, and Jeff Johns. Written by Eric Wallace and Sam Chaslin. Part 2, developed by Greg Berlanti, Mark Guggenheim, and Andrew Kreisberg. Teleplay by Mark Guggenheim and story by Carolyn Dries. And Part 3, developed by Greg Berlanti, Ali Adler, and Andrew Kreisberg. Teleplay by Derek Simon and Robert L. Rovner, and story by Mark Guggenheim.
Just want to say before we get to the ratings, I was very glad to see Kevin Tankeron's name as part one director. He goes back and forth between the Marvel and DC universes on the action parts of the comic book shows, and he does a great job. It was great to see him there, as well as James Bamford and Jesse Warren. Great job by all of them. So let's talk about the ratings. On Sunday, we usually talk about Supergirl, but we're not this time around. We're going to talk about The Flash, had the 9th episode of the 5th season titled Elseworlds Part 1. Try to say that 5 times fast. And the live rating was 1.83. That's a pretty good Sunday rating for Supergirl, but Flash is kind of low. On Monday, Arrow aired their 9th episode of the 7th season titled Elseworlds Part 2 to a live rating of 2.06. And on Tuesday, normally in the Flash spot, Supergirl aired the 9th episode of the 4th season titled Elseworlds Part 3 with a live rating of 2.17. Guys, this is good ratings for this year, but it isn't great ratings for the crossover. I think we've seen a fundamental shift in how people are consuming this. I'll bet you 10 to 1 that at least double that have watched it on the CW app.
I think that's safe to say, and we're also getting to that time of year where people are starting to get busy with holiday festivity prep, like kids having their holiday concerts at school and stuff like that, so people aren't having as much time to sit around and watch some TV, so they're watching either after the fact on the app or on their DVRs. It's a tough time of year.
Also, there was, I think, The Voice and some awards show and their sports ball, so especially Sunday. And Sunday's a tough night to win and everything. So really 1.8 for Sunday, I think that's respectable.
But weren't the shows on the same nights? I mean, not these shows, because they did a swap of the three nights, but weren't, because Flash and Supergirl swapped nights, but weren't the shows on the same nights with the crossover previously, and they did a lot better in the ratings compartment?
Well, that was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And also, they aired the week prior. They were episode 8.
Oh, okay. And this is the mid-season finale for all three shows.
Right. They effectively had a mid-season finale, and then they had a crossover the next week is what all the shows seem to have done, but it works.
Man, we didn't get a Queen Christmas party this year. Dang it. Oh, well. I was kind of hoping they slipped one into the crossover, but they didn't. Anyway, Elseworlds was the title of all three episodes, and we usually equate the title to the theme of the episodes. So, Michelle, why don't you work your magic and tell us what the theme of these episodes were?
Well, we have a being called the Monitor in preparation for a bigger threat that's coming, which we'll talk about, gives a book of destiny to a Dr. John Deegan, and Deegan creates this alternate realities because Monitor wants him to think big and rewrite things and test the heroes, test the Earth. And that's what happens. We get these Elseworlds, alternate realities.
I think you hit it square on the head, Michelle. Definitely Elseworlds was the theme. It was kind of fun.
With some Quantum Leap and Freaky Friday moments.
Yeah, we're going to talk all about it. It was fun, and we've got a lot to talk about. But I think because we are predominantly an Arrow podcast, let's start out with something that's more Arrow-esque, right, guys? Let's talk about Oliver Queen and his role and his portrayal in these three episodes. Michelle, why don't you start us off?
First off, I liked how the first episode and part of the second one was really just a roast of Oliver Queen. Part of me really enjoyed that. Oliver had a very interesting journey. And for something that's supposed to be a crossover and feature basically the CW trinity of Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl, I think Oliver had quite an interesting arc. I thought it was hilarious, him trying to get used to Barry's powers, how he kept missing the target. I mean, this is the Green Arrow who always hits a target, but he couldn't hit a target running. He overshoot, you know, locations and everything. But he learns that Barry just isn't all sunshine and rainbows. He really thought Barry had it easy. But he ends up learning more about Barry, learning more about himself. We're going to talk a lot about what happens with Oliver and all the cute little moments and funny moments and stuff. But eventually we get this moment with the Monitor, and he has a great monologue. Stephen Amell did a great job with that scene with the Monitor. And I think it's just really interesting how in these three episodes, we see Oliver realize why he's jealous of Barry, and then how he gets his power, you know, his own thing comes from, to sort of realizing his true self and where he thinks he fits in the world.
I particularly liked his portrayal of Barry and Barry's portrayal of Oliver, because you could see them trying to channel each other when they were swapped into each other's superpowers, or Oliver swapped into Barry's superpowers and Barry swapped into Oliver's grudgingness, I guess. And hubris, I guess that was brought up multiple times. I think they channeled each other really well. The only thing is Grant Gustin just didn't have the upper body to pull off the brawn of Oliver. But other than that, he channeled him pretty good, even to the point of, you have failed the city. That was really good. But we'll talk about Barry later. Oliver, I got the sense, and I've been forecasting this for a while, and I know a lot of people that listen to the show think I'm wrong, and good. I'm glad you do, because the season of Arrow has been amazing. But I got a lot of foreshadowing that Oliver Queen might not be around next year through this arc. Michelle, you mentioned that they roasted him. They did. It was a roast of Oliver Queen part of the way through, and it was fun from that aspect. I wish that Sarah Lance was going to be around too for that, because she could have gotten a great few jabs in. But Oliver, he's made some sort of a deal, and we'll talk about that later, but he enabled this whole thing to come off at the end. Now, it took everybody, but I think without Oliver doing whatever he did at the end, I don't think this would have pulled off. So Oliver is definitely the linchpin, and I think CW was pandering to him a bit, because he was the first. Arrow was the first out of all this. Even in the Marvel side of things, Arrow was first. I think it was a good homage to Oliver and everything about him. Chris, what do you think?
So I enjoyed the way that the actors portrayed each other, for lack of a better term, and I thought that was a lot of fun. I liked seeing how Oliver got to progress through this, but really my biggest concern is that, or issue, I guess, is that the way Oliver Queen's portrayed, the one that's holding on to the dark feelings, coming out of a dark place, that's the Oliver from a few seasons back. That's not really what he's evolved into now. I mean, that's the Oliver that was struggling with his decision to kill and why he killed, breaking down and being like, I killed because I liked it. So I kind of felt like we weren't getting the starting point in this crossover of an Oliver from season 7, but more of an Oliver from like season 4, the way he was portrayed. And it kind of goes away as it evolves and he starts to get more comfortable with Barry's powers and how things progress. But the whole premise of, I've got to be lighthearted to use Barry's powers, and I've got to be dark and channel my anger and my insecurity to be Oliver Queen, that's not quite the Oliver Queen we've had recently. That's not quite the Green Arrow we've had recently. I just felt like you could tell there were different writers handling Oliver Queen than normally, or something like that, because it didn't seem to jive with season 7.
Yeah, or reverting to the previous writers that had handled him.
Right. So the evolution we've had of the character, I think they stepped him back for the purposes of the crossover a little bit. Now, is that necessarily bad? No, but it was a bit jarring. I can understand why some people have issues with it. Now, I tend not to agree with everything they say in the Arrow subreddit on Reddit, but this was one of the things like, yeah, that's kind of what hit me the wrong way, especially as he's trying to teach Barry to use his powers. And I was like, but that's not him anymore.
First off, there are people who don't watch Arrow who are now watching the crossover. And I think you're right. This really isn't season 7. But I think by episode 2, we caught up to season 7 Oliver. And then especially into the third episode we did, you know, he talked to Felicity, which is something that he really hadn't been doing. I think it's really interesting in each of the parts. Each of the three had their moment. Barry with Iris, and then Oliver, when the world thinks he's Barry, has his moment with Felicity where they actually talk because they are having problems in their marriage. And then at the end, I don't know what the right word is. I don't think content is, but I think he is a bit clear-headed. And I think it kind of helps with whatever they're going to do for the rest of this 7th season with Oliver. I think it'll make sense.
So, two things. First of all, I thought the issue with Felicity and Oliver, I think that was trumped up. And if I was the writers, I think I would have handled that before the crossover. I would have tried to have done that before the crossover. But in retrospect, they really didn't have time because he just gets out of prison and they only had one episode together. So they create the issue and then they haven't solved it yet and haven't had time to. But I just wish they would have had time to solve it, because I don't think that should have been in the crossover. At least it was in the Arrow episode of the crossover. It wasn't in one of the other episodes, so you're not clueless going into anything else. The other thing, you mentioned his demeanor at the end. His demeanor struck me kind of like what it was at the end of season 6, where he made the deal with Agent Watson and he knew he was going to prison. That's the sort of demeanor that I got from him at the end of this episode. Like, he's made some sort of a deal with the Monitor. And he's content, and he's got a certain amount of time left, or he's got to do a certain few things, and then whatever deal that he made happens. And what's funny is that if you're watching the show and you don't realize that there was a deal made, you wouldn't know. But there had to have been a deal made, because Barry and Kara, destinies were changed, and they had to be changed somehow. So I think that was Oliver, and I think that's why his demeanor has changed.
Yeah, and I agree with how you phrase that. It's very similar to what we saw at the end of season 6, where he did something, he knows not everyone's going to like it, but he's kind of at peace with his decision.
And he's done it before. I mean, this is just a repeat of what he's recently done.
Mm-hmm. That's because he kind of likes those guys, but you can't tell anyone.
Well, it's also Oliver's forte. He's still has his moments of, I got to do stuff alone and everything. And that toast, he says to appreciating what you have, however long you might have it. I don't know if he's going to die or if he has to give up being the Green Arrow or maybe do some action that, I don't know, sets up something. But yeah, he's made a deal.
I don't know if the decision's been made at CW/Warner Brothers on what's going to happen with him. Because if they do happen to renew the series, then it would behoove them to bring Oliver Queen back, I would think. I mean, I've been foreshadowing that he's not coming back. I equate it to a Stargate. You had RDA leave the series after 8 seasons, but the series kept going on a couple of years. I think Arrow is more set to move on without Oliver Queen than Stargate was set to move on without Richard Dean Anderson. But still, you remove Oliver Queen, you remove Stephen Amell from Arrow, and you're going to have a fan backlash against the show, because we saw what happened with Laurel. That was a character that wasn't all that loved, but yet was a main character, and yet there was a big backlash. What if you remove the main character? I don't know, guys.
So one thing to consider, though, is we'll touch on this later, but they tease what next crossover is. And one could argue that's kind of ballsy at this point in time, considering we're 9 episodes in on this season of all of these shows. So you're not sure of renewals. But as you sit and think about it, you go, well, wait a second. Flash and Supergirl are probably coming back for sure. They've got Black Lightning. They've got Legends, which may or may not come back. They want to do a Batwoman show, rather. So even if Arrow goes away, there's still another show they could toss in there to fill that slot for a crossover. And because of the nature of what they teased, it's very easy to bring Stephen Amell back for a guest spot to do that crossover or something like that. So they've got options for what they're going to do. It doesn't necessarily mean they're anticipating that they go, how many shows do they have? 4 for 4 across the board, 5 for 5 across the board on renewals. They're just probably assuming they can pull another 3 between the renewals and the new shows they want to do. So if you want to move past Arrow, this would be the season to potentially do it. And the deal he makes with the Monitor is potentially a way to put that in place. And then you have the final fallout in the crossover. I don't know. I mean, there's so much stuff that could happen, and there's so much time between now and when it does happen.
So let's move on to Barry. I thought it was hilarious that he thought it was like super cool rad that he was the Green Arrow. He's like fighting all of that, and he's doing the salmon ladder.
We got a salmon ladder. We did. I didn't think we were going to get one. We got one.
But my favorite part was at the beginning, where Diggle's like, Oliver, we need you at this thing. And he gives him the outfit. And Barry's like, how do you put this on?
Does somebody help? I don't understand.
And then I also enjoyed the tie-in later when they're in Gotham and Oliver dresses him at super speed. And I'm like, well, I guess Barry's not quick at getting dressed as the Green Arrow yet. It's kind of creepy at the same time, though.
And Oliver gets to use the ring suit. That just pops up and then you step into it.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then not only that, he's a Batman fan. And Oliver's like, Batman's a myth. I'm the original vigilante. That's where that comes from.
Yeah. So going to Gotham was very interesting. I don't know if it was necessary. And if they did it, why didn't they stay there? Because Deegan moves to Central City then? I didn't understand that. Why didn't they just stay in Gotham?
Because plot.
I guess.
I honestly have no idea.
Deegan, his home is Gotham. I don't understand why he moved to Central City. Does anybody have a theory on that? Other than they needed to go to Central City for sets?
I mean, one could argue that making the Fallen Star Labs into your own personal enclave and tribute to yourself might be something he was interested in. I mean, he is something of a scientist himself, so maybe there's some attachment to Star Labs that he wanted to get into. I don't know. I presume it's probably just because they wanted to set it back there for production cost reasons.
And he's in Gotham, and he doesn't include Batman. And he's got the book, right? The book shows everything. So he's got to know who Batman is. He's got to know Bruce Wayne is. So why isn't that brought into the mix?
Well, to be fair, Batman's been gone for, 3 years at that point in time? So he's probably not necessarily thinking about Batman and that involvement, but maybe Batwoman, whose presence arguably is somewhat known, I would think.
Right. But to get back to Barry, I love the fact that he shoots Oliver with the crossbows in the back. That was great.
I know. He was like, I've been waiting 4 years to do this. It's amazing. And of course, that happens at the Kent farm. That was a wonderful, because if you watched Smallville, like Chris and I did, that was the same set. And one of my favorite Easter eggs was when they finally go to the Kent farm. There's the music, Save Me, which was the intro.
By Remy Zero.
Yes, that was amazing. Because then we got to meet, you know, Lois and Clark. And I thought it was funny because Barry and Oliver are like, okay, wait a minute. Is it just Earth 1 or is it everywhere? And they end up popping over to Earth 38 to see if Kara can recognize him. And I just love how Lois Lane, like when they pop in there, Lois is just like ready with that hammer to like get Oliver and Barry.
Yeah, it's very much a Lois Lane-esque trait too. Lois is very much a leap before you look kind of character, especially go back to the Smallville portrayal by Erica Durance. She was very much like that. So having the character act like that on the Kent farm that we've seen in Smallville for what, 11 seasons? Oh, it was fun.
I did not see Smallville, but I definitely got a little bit of Margot Kidder from Elizabeth Tulloch, who played Lois Lane. I mean, just maybe it was the voice, maybe it was the attitude, I don't know, but it brought me back to the 78 Superman. So for that, thank you.
And Kara does recognize him, which is great. And she ends up going back to Earth One. What's interesting with her, I think it's very interesting how all the time they always go to Earth One in the crossovers. And we learn that there's no Kara Danvers on Earth One, which is something that I had hypothesized for a while, that either A, Krypton is still fine with this version of Earth, or Kara pod did not land. Maybe she's still trapped in the Phantom Zone. You know, maybe Clark didn't land in Kansas with Earth One. Maybe he landed someplace else. But it does set up, again, what they want to do next year. The stage is set. It's going to be easy to bring Supergirl over to Earth One.
Yeah, and this is something we'd all predicted when they originally announced the crossover of all three. What was it, the end of Flash Season 2? I think it was, where, oh my god, they're going to do this to merge all the Earths. Well, they're going to merge the Earths, potentially.
To date, we only had 53 Earths. I think I talked about this last time. We've only had 52 Earths plus Earth X, so that's 53. But this time, we were shown an Earth 90, where Barry Allen was the original TV Barry Allen, which was great.
And the Green Arrow was seemingly wore the costume of Justin Hartley from Smallville.
So we have confirmation that there's more than 52 Earths, and I don't know how many that you need for a Crisis, but I guess you have Infinite Earths, right?
That was the title of Crisis on Infinite Earths, was the title of the book.
Yep, so we got as many Earths as we need to screw around with. But yeah, Kara, that was an interesting one to me, because she's in... I'm glad they wrote it in that she was kind of running from the DEO or separated from the DEO, because you didn't have a lot of interaction on Supergirl. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about this. If I'm watching Supergirl on Netflix or the CW app or whatever, and I go down and I get to this one, and we've talked about this before on the crossover, there were very few scenes with actual Supergirl characters. Right? It was mostly the big three plus Superman. And I would feel a little shortchanged. John Jones was barely on the screen. You had Brainy for, what, two short scenes? I mean, they did awesome when they were on, but they weren't really there. And even Alex, she wasn't on the screen much, but it really focused on Kara and her issue right now. It's like, what was that episode right after Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2? What was that name of that episode, Chris? Do you remember?
No, I can look it up real quick. But, I mean, that was all about the recovery of everything that happened.
Yeah, so it focused on Jean-Luc Picard. And there were other scenes, but it focused on Jean-Luc Picard as he was recovering from his ordeal. And that's kind of what this was for Kara, because she's getting ready for a fight of her life. She knows that Clark's not going to be around. That was convenient, by the way they wrote that out. We'll have to talk about that later. So it's just going to be Kara and outside of the DEO. And I think she needed something like this to get ready for that within the Supergirl timeline.
That is a really good point. You know, one of the things on Supergirl has always been, where Superman, and how come he doesn't come around? And I think it's great that they are severing her from the DEO. And now they get to sever her away from Superman. She gets to become her own superhero, so to say. She's still going to be Kara Danvers working at CatCo. We're still going to have that part. But I think it's going to be really interesting for Supergirl to be her own hero. And I think that's going to be an amazing opportunity for her to grow.
If you take a look at any of the DC properties, the big two that always come out are Batman and Superman. If you take away Superman, you don't have Batman. I can see trying to prop up Supergirl because she's basically the Superman of this universe now. And then you've got Batwoman coming in as the at least character that's there. Don't know if there's going to be a show or not, but at least the character there of Batman. So they're doing some substitutions, which is good, in order to maintain that core group as they go forward with this for the next year or two. So I think they've done a good job with what they've got, because they're not going to have a show about Superman. They could, but they're not. They're not going to have a show about Batman. So, yeah, I think this was well written. It was great hearing about the Superman baby, Superman Lois Lane baby, and then the marriage. I hope that we get maybe a wedding in the crossover next time. It would be great.
Man, there was a rumor they were talking about wanting to do a Superman show now that Cavill was supposedly out. And the entire time I watched Tyler Hoechlin in his role as both Superman and Dark Superman, I was like, be really good in a show. And then the next thought I had is, who's going to cast him in something new because of how well he's doing in this crossover?
Yeah, that would be difficult. Anybody that's played Superman in the past, it's difficult to go on to a different role. I mean, Brandon Routh's been having fun right now, but it took him a while to get where he's at.
So we've talked about the deal with Oliver, and how Barry and Kara's destiny was supposed to be changed. They were supposed to die doing something that is straight from the Superman films. And SP, I'm going to toss this to you right after I describe what's supposed to happen. They want to slow down time to give people the opportunity to get the book back from Deegan. So the Flash and Supergirl run at Mach 7 or something in opposite directions, the Earth, and they're going to slow down the Earth so to have that pause of time. And originally they were going to burn up in the process. And Oliver, again, has that great monologue about how, if you're testing us, we're supposed to know our true selves. I know my true self. And I know that Barry and Kara, you know, when they dig deep, they become the best of us. They inspire us. They're our hope. And that's why he makes the deal. So, SP.
Yeah, it went right back to 1978 when Christopher Reeve as Superman was upset about the death of Lois Lane and did the circle around the Earth to wind back time so he could go back and save Margot Kidder. That was straight. Although this was different because you had them going in opposite directions, which somehow then slowed the Earth down. I'm not even going to get into the physics. There's no way to talk about the physics here. It doesn't work, right? So, yeah, I just took it as an homage to the 1978 Superman. It was great because they panned out and they took that shot of the entire Earth, which was straight out of the 78 movie where you had Superman going round and round and round and then creating that red line that was running around when he was doing the orbits around. And that's what Flash and Supergirl were doing. So yeah, it was, wow, what a great Easter egg for that. There might be some other things in movies that are equal to that, but that's just where my mind went, because they're talking about a super person that is turning back time. And I don't know if they even needed to do that or not, because Oliver got the special arrowhead. That's what the whole deal was, by the way. You got an arrowhead for something. I don't know. So the monitor called Novu gave him an arrowhead. And did he need time to slow down in order to shoot that? I don't know if he did.
I thought it was just the kryptonite arrowhead that he pulled out earlier.
No, it was blue.
Okay.
It was a shiny blue thing. Well, it did because Oliver was normal speed and the book was open and it gave him almost a stationary target to hit.
Okay. So he wouldn't make the same mistake that the Avengers did and hit the Thanos in the wrong place.
Exactly.
Okay. Should have got the headshot.
So they do go to Gotham and we meet Kate Kane, who I loved. It was wonderful. I love the flirtation between Kate and Kara. Kara blushing a little bit. And I know we're talking about why did they go to Gotham. First off, I think it was cool. There's so many Easter eggs. But I had that question too. And I think to me, it was answered when we learned that they want to do Crisis next year. One of the things that they set up is in Arkham, they basically introduced the Psycho Pirate. And at the end of the crossover, Deegan, who is transformed because of his connection with the book, and when Oliver destroys the book, it changes him physically. He ends up as a inmate patient of Arkham. And next to him is Psycho Pirate, because you can see the gold mask and everything. I put a link in the show notes that Collider actually did a nice explanation of Psycho Pirate. But just due to a short version, he's very important in Crisis because he is connected to the Anti-Monitor, who in the comic books, that's the big bad that the Monitor's worried about, is the Anti-Monitor. I don't know if they're going to keep the name, but I'm sure they are since they call this guy the Monitor. Because really, I don't know how else you could have introduced Psycho Pirate. I think it was, you got Gotham, which I think it's been name dropped and people have been wanting to see. You got a really cool introduction with Batwoman. I thought she was cool. You had that great moment when Barry and Oliver are fighting who they think their fears are, but they end up fighting each other. I thought that was interesting because that's where, you know, Barry and Oliver learn a lot about each other. Yes, they could have done it someplace else in a different way, but I thought it was a really cool way to use basically Scarecrow's fear toxin. So I kind of think that's why they ended up going to Gotham. Chris, I don't know how much you remember about Crisis and stuff. What do you think?
I think what you're saying makes sense. I don't remember a ton about Crisis. It's been years since I last read it. But they put everything in motion. It seemed like they needed to set up the crossover for next year. And like I said, take some brass ones to a year out. Be like, here's our next crossover. Enjoy. So I enjoyed that. And they've certainly gotten the hype. If you go and look on the internet, really, on a lot of the fan sites, there's all sorts of speculation of what's this mean for all of these shows when they do Crisis. So, yeah, they got to do a cool setup while continuing this crossover. It all made sense and was cool to me.
Kate Kane mentioned something that basically Deegan had made some interesting new friends, basically, in Arkham. And I'm kind of curious why she didn't have any power to kind of separate them or try to intervene in that friendship, because if she knows it's going on, she's probably going to be monitoring it. So I think we're all set up for next year for the crossover. And I might add, ever since this crossover was announced, this Elseworlds crossover in the fall of 2018 was announced earlier on in the year, we were all kind of scratching our heads over it and we're like, eh. I wasn't too thrilled about Legends of Tomorrow not being included. I'm still not. Yes, Legends of Tomorrow had a decent episode, but they still could have been part of the crossover. I don't think there was the enthusiasm going into this as there will be next year. First of all, the event is definitely bigger. Everybody knows about Crisis. It's like Civil War over in the Marvel Universe. Everybody that knows anything about DC Comics knows that Crisis is a huge crossover that's happened in the comics, huge event that's happened in the comics. So yes, this is going to get a lot of press. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be paying attention to these shows, getting ready for next year. So it's genius for them. I think we'll see an even ratings bump for the second half of the year on some of these shows as they get ready. Well, these three main shows anyway. Great. And it was interesting. And I'm curious as to how it's all going to pan out for them. Are the ratings going to go up just a little bit?
I'm curious who's going to write it.
Yeah.
Oh, Geoff Johns has to be involved.
That's my hope, is they get Geoff Johns involved. But, I mean, who out of the Arrow, Legends, Supergirl, Flash, whatever, writing staff do they bring in to do it? Because this is an ambitious project. It's very ambitious to try and pull off your own version of Crisis in what is presumably a 3-episode crossover.
Guggenheim is close to being able to pull it off, but I don't think he can do it alone. Geoff Johns was involved in part one of this crossover.
He was involved in a lot of episodes of Smallville once they decided to embrace the superhero aspect, like the JSA episodes and stuff like that. It's not unheard of for Geoff Johns to be involved, but remember, he's also a pretty busy guy, too. He may not be running the DC movie side of the house anymore, but he's some kind of creative consultant over the entire DC universe and helping plot things out for the comics and stuff, so he's really busy.
I have a question, because I was thinking, it says fall 2019. Could they actually take the first 9 episodes of each show and kind of do
different threads?
Yeah, different threads.
That'd be very ambitious.
Yeah, they couldn't do a crossover for 9 episodes, but they could like do it at the beginning and then maybe at the end and then maybe with some guest appearances along the way. But you couldn't do it the whole time because of the problems they have with shooting schedules and storylines. Remember, we've been told all about the problems with this, and the secondary characters would be almost not there. So I don't think they could do it for the entire first half of the season. I was thinking that they were going to start the season off with this versus have it at the mid-season finale spot, but I could be wrong there too.
Yeah, because in Crisis, events kind of happen on different Earths, and like they're trying to solve their problem on their separate Earth. So it's almost as though like Kara, whether it's Oliver on Arrow or if they're going to bring Batwoman on Batgirl or whatever, they're going to fill that one. And then Barry with the Flash, and they're trying to deal with it and do their own thing. And then eventually they realize that the crossover. It would be interesting. I mean, because to do this and to do Crisis in 3 hours.
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe their intent is, because remember, how many shows do we predict we're going to have? We're going to have we're assuming Arrow, Supergirl, Flash probably make it, all 3 of them. We've got Legends, maybe. We've got Black Lightning and potentially a Batwoman show. So let's assume we have 5 or 6 shows. If you cross over all 5 or 6, which you presumably would need to do with Crisis because it brings everything together, that would be pretty cool. It's effectively 2 movies.
And if you do the wedding of Superman on Argo as part of it, I mean, wow, it could work.
Well, the real question is, how does everything get reset with Crisis? You could have him get married, and then when the reset happens, he's like, he's no longer married, or there's no kid, or something like that. Who knows? They could really change things.
So the only thing I have to go on within the DC CW universe is Flashpoint. And Flashpoint was 1 episode, and it was a major event in Flash, and I think most of the rest of the DC comics. So yeah, they could do it in 1 episode. Even Civil War over on the Marvel side was quite an event, and they did it in 1 movie. It could be done in 1 crossover event. They're going to have to skip over a lot, and they don't even have a lot of the main characters. So it is going to be an adaptation.
So SP, is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Yeah. So we normally talk about the fights, and we haven't talked about the fights. The fights were amazing. You mentioned the fight in Arkham Asylum when they were fighting each other and they thought they were fighting their nemesis, basically Reverse Flash and Malcolm. By the way, Malcolm coming back, that was great. Even if it was 1 scene, it was great seeing him back on the show. I was loving the fight choreography. It was really obvious to me that they were using extensive stunt doubles for all of this stuff. And I can see the faces now, and you can see that the faces are getting blurred. And maybe that's because the the blurring technology is digital and a lot easier now, so they can go. We were talking about how are you going to have stuntman without masks now. If you just show it from the side and then you blur kind of the face a little bit in the whatever frames that you see the face, I think we're going to see more of that as things go on. But the fights, by the way, they were just great. You had that. You had the training, which was fun. You had the little fight with Superman with the crane. And then later on, they were taking the book away from him. I mean, the fights, they weren't as epic as they were in the last crossover, but they were still pretty good with the three of them. And it was more of a hero's journey than it was fights, but the fights were still there. So it was good to see him.
Chris, anything else you want to like talk about?
Super, super ambitious. I think they pulled it off really well. I was really happy to see how much Superman featured into things, just because I've been pleasantly surprised how much I've enjoyed Tyler Hoechlin in the role. So the fact that we got that much of it was really cool. I am now holding out hope that for next year's Crisis, since they like doing some Easter eggs of stuff, we might get some more Smallville references, and I don't know, maybe some Michael Rosenbaum's Lex Luthor. That'd be fantastic.
Who liked Mr. Ramon?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I don't know how they juggled all the people they did. The fact that they got so many characters on screen, meanwhile keeping the focus basically on four people, it was ambitious. I know there's certainly people outside the core four got shortchanged when it came to their appearances, things like that. Like, for instance, I was really hoping for more of John Wesley Shipp as Barry Allen, but the fact he was there at all was a delight. I really wish they had not put that in any commercials.
Yeah, because it was such a small part of the crossover, you were expecting more and you didn't get it.
They showed most of his appearance in the crossovers. I mean, in the commercials, excuse me. The words meant something different in my head. They came out wrong.
Again, it was great to see John Wesley Shipp as Barry Allen from Earth 90. That was great.
Yeah, I was impressed with the fights. I love how Barry had the most awkward landing from a zipline arrow ever. I know Brainy was only in there for a few moments, but I loved when he came on and he was like, oh, a robot who's taking on Superman. This is fascinating. Thank you for bringing me. And he just takes Amazo up and you don't really see the fight, but then he comes down and is like, oh yeah, here's the motherboard. I thought that was fun.
The best, I guess, Easter egg that I saw was actually Gary. I loved Gary, especially the line that he slipped in there. That was great. Michelle, do you like it?
Yeah. I want to get to some Easter eggs in a little bit, some more of those. But other things that I liked how the intros changed. The Flash intro was the same. And then with Arrow, Barry Allen was doing being Oliver Queen. And then part three was like the Superman doing that. I thought there were a lot of little touches and a lot of Easter eggs. I just listed the ones that I found. Okay. This is not from an article. I can spot Easter eggs as well. First off, yes, I loved Gary, but the first one I want to talk about is Barry Allen from Earth 90 comes in, sees Diggle, and says, "Where's your ring?" Yes. And they have been teasing Diggle as Green Lantern all this time. And oh my gosh. Oh, they keep teasing it too much. You know, right? You know, Chris?
Do you think we'll get it in Crisis? That's the question. When they're bringing all these worlds together, do you think we'll even get like a 30 second of John Diggle Green Lantern from Earth 90?
That'd be so cool. I first saw it. I admittedly did not watch that episode live because, well, we were podcasting for Gonna Geek, but I saw a tweet come in. And it was from Adam, StarSaber_222. So yes, Adam, I did read your tweet. I was like, huh? This has me really intrigued. So I watched the episode as soon as I could. It was like, oh, it's so awesome. I hope it's just not lip service. And yeah, guys, I hope we actually get to see it in the future, even if it's for a scene, just like we got John Wesley Shipp, just basically for a scene. It would be great seeing Diggle as Green Lantern for a scene.
Some other little Easter eggs. Ralph in the Flash episode says, man, it's not even Tuesday, because Flash aired on Sunday and usually airs on Tuesday.
That was fun.
When Clark opens his shirt for the first time, there was just a little bit of that traditional Superman music. And of course, when he was asked, who are you? He says, a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, when I rewatched this using my computer, I watched it online again. I paused it to take a list of the Arkham inmates.
Oh.
We had Oswald Cobblepot, that's the Penguin. Isley, that's Poison Ivy. Carlo, that's Clayface. And we have Enigma, which is Riddler. His riddle was, what is blue and gray and red all over? I don't know.
Got me there.
Of course, we had M. Guggenheim, one of the writers and used to be the showrunner. Later on, we actually meet Freeze. We meet actually her, who's played by Stephen Amell's wife, Nora. It's Nora Freeze. And her crisis was shut off and she has to be cold. And we actually see the cold gun and there's actually a V in front of it. So Victor Freeze exists in Gotham on Earth One. So there was that. I was trying to figure on one of the shelves in there. Did I see the Bane mask?
You did. The Bane mask from The Dark Knight Rises was right up over. It was to the right of Nora Freeze as we were on her right. So left side of the screen when she was trying to retrieve the gun or the cryo tank. I can't remember which. But yeah, it was totally Tom Hardy's Bane mask.
Thank you very much. Other little things, when Batwoman and Supergirl shake hands and they say world's finest.
That was awesome.
That's a comics reference, isn't it?
Yeah, Superman and Batman were in a series called World's Finest.
Oh, okay.
I loved how in the Trigger Twins, episode 3, rewrite, Diaz was a cop, and he actually said, Oliver Queen, I've been waiting to do this for a long time. And that's basically what he said in like one of the episodes this season, right?
Yep.
I love how Oliver just, you know, takes the gun and just starts shooting. Like, it just, he made the leap that this doesn't matter, that we need to get back to normal, and everything's going to be erased, so I don't care what I do with these cops.
And in the Trigger Twins moment, that's where we see Gary. He is a bartender at the bar where Cisco Ramon is the crime lord. It was wonderful. And he actually says, oh, you're not my heroes, you're legends. And there's, Gary from Legends of Tomorrow. I paused it and I can't really zoom or anything. And it's not really high res. I'm trying to figure out, was he wearing his Time Bureau badge or pin?
Not that I noticed, but I would have to go back and look again to be sure.
Because one of the pins is like the world. Like you see all the continents and stuff. And I don't know. Maybe I was just wanting it to be there. An extra Easter egg. Chris, did you notice any other Easter eggs you want to talk about?
I think we've touched on most of them. I mean, the one that had me geeking out the most we talked about earlier was when they cut to Smallville and they started playing Remy Zero, Somebody Save Me. And I was just like, oh, man. And I had this nostalgia hit me and I was like, yep, Smallville. And as much as that show might not have aged well as a product of its time, I still have a fond spot for it to this day.
I've only had the chance to watch everything once. And it wasn't in the best of circumstances along the way. Just, it's an incredibly busy week for me. I do plan on going back and rewatching, and especially since it's the holiday break for them and they're not coming back till like 15th or the 20th of January, somewhere along those lines. So I'm definitely going to watch these again, and I'm going to start writing down all of the Easter eggs that I catch, and we'll just have to list them on a future show that we have.
Well, I think we can agree that this was a pretty good crossover. When it, going to throw this out there, thinking about all the other crossovers that they've done, where would you think it's good as the others, better, worse?
Ooh, that's tough. Crisis on Earth X, I think, is still the best crossover. Just because the spectacle, having all of the superheroes that we've seen in these worlds come together and have a giant fight scene, plus, while I enjoyed Elseworlds, right now there's no lasting ramifications. Now those will probably be coming into play when we figure out what Oliver's deal is. There's lasting ramifications from Crisis on Earth X, which is the Professor dies, and it changes and shakes up the Legends team.
I'd go last year's Crisis on Earth X, or whatever that was last year. I'd go that as number one. I'd go Invasion as number two, just because it was fun getting the gang together for the first time. And then I'd throw this in there, and it'll mean more when the next crossover comes out. But as of now, it's definitely number three. It's not number one for me. It was fun. It just wasn't as grandiose. And I wish the Legends of Tomorrow were part of it. I guess you could say they were, because Gary was a part of it. But Sarah Lance really needed to be a part of a few things here, and she wasn't. She was having fun over on her own show.
Yeah, I have to admit, I still remember last year's when they had that whole team slow walk in during that last episode before the big fight with Nazis. And really, they got to punch Nazis, and that's always epic in its own right. But I do, you know, so I really liked last year's. And I would rank that one better than this one. It would be really interesting, considering how they do next year, what it would be like to watch this crossover followed by what next year is. And
see, this is almost like part one of next year's crossovers, how I'm looking at it almost, because they're setting the stage for a lot of things that'll come to fruition in Crisis next year.
Or just the shows, too, because once again, we don't know what Oliver has bartered to get that special arrowhead from the monitor.
Well, the real question is, when does that come due? My guess is that price doesn't come due until next year's crossover.
Yeah, right, because the monitor is trying to prepare everybody for it.
Which makes me start to think that CW is more inclined to do another season of Arrow.
See, if they do it at the very beginning, you couldn't do that.
You could do a 13-episode arc, but like we talked about at the top of the show, they've got lots of ways to write themselves around it if they don't.
If you do the crossover as the first episodes of all the shows, you could get away with it. But the problem is, if Oliver Queen goes away and they cancel Arrow, which I don't think they're going to do at this point, but I've been saying that they aren't, then you would know after the crossover that Arrow wasn't going to be there, because Arrow hasn't been renewed. So they really have to renew Arrow, even for a 13-episode season, in order for that to work.
Or make him a legend. No, I don't know.
Or remove Arrow from the equation in a totality, take care of it at the season finale of Arrow, and you don't have a show next year. But I think one way or the other, you're going to have an Arrow next year, because you're going to have, you know, the flash forward. I think that's a possibility to go next year too. Anyway, yeah, so crossover, they've all been good. I mean, none of them have been bad. It's not like they stank or anything. It's just, I thought last year's was better.
I would have to agree. And we had some great feedback about a previous show that we did. We will discuss it on a future episode, so please keep those comments coming. I know we had some comments on our YouTube video. We really appreciate it. Please keep them coming. Please understand that we had 3 hours of television to talk about, and we are trying to keep this at our usual podcast length of an hour. So thank you for your understanding. And again, please keep those comments coming.
Yep, we look forward to talking about them in the future. Absolutely.
Now, Chris, we are part of a larger podcasting network, aren't we?
That's right, Michelle. The Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of the Gunna Geek Network, where we have 20-plus different shows in our network that cover a variety of different geeky and nerdy topics. Some of it is specific television shows, like us, to talk about Arrow. Others is general geek culture, board games, video games. There's all sorts of stuff. I can't begin to describe it all. And as much as I would love to tell you about every show on the network, that would be a show in and of itself. But what I can do is give you a taste of another show and say, hey, you might want to go check this out. And this show would be On the Bubble Podcast, specifically episode 31, talking about Last Man Standing. Last Man Standing was canceled by ABC after 6 successful seasons and was then renewed by Fox a year later. Both the cancellation and the renewal got mired by political mudslinging. So in this episode, Josh is joined by GunnaGeek.com founder Stephen John Drew to discuss the situation. I got all tongue twisted there when I remembered it was Stephen there. But yes, so you can go and get Stephen and Josh's take both on how a successful show goes from successful to canceled to renewed again and continues going. On the Bubble's a really fun podcast, guys.
It is. And this one was very interesting because you had an Australian and a Canadian talking about an American potential political aspect to the cancellation. So I think they did a really good job of it. So Last Man Standing, episode 31.
All right. Well, all that being said, then it is time for us to start wrapping up this week's show. So thank you to all of our live listeners who participate in the chat room over at geeks.live. But also a thank you goes out to those of you that download the audio podcast at starlingtribune.com and to those who watch the video replays over at youtube.com/gunnageek. We do appreciate you guys consuming, and we also appreciate any and all comments we get as well.
If you happen to have an Amazon device, you can always enable our podcast as a skill. Just say whatever the activation word and enable the Starling Tribune, and you can have full audio playback controls. Also, we now have a Discord server at www.gunnageek.com/discord. You can join in and join in all the great chat. We've had some interesting chat. We've been trying to stay spoiler free on this crossover until everybody's had a chance to watch it, but it's been interesting, the conversation back and forth. And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 7:30 p.m. Eastern and 4:30 p.m. Pacific on Thursdays, and look forward to a future episode, perhaps, on Aquaman.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag switchies.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag still no Hasselot.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag super baby. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit gunnageek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.